Welcome to New York, Quebec, and the water route to the center of the world. This is bonus episode 29, The Civil War in Revolutionary Westchester County. I released a preview episode of my upcoming second season on the American Revolution, as I wanted to stress the three distinct phases the course of the conflict took in New York. I included the Battle of White Plains as representative of the British invasion, the Battle of Forts Clinton and Montgomery to represent the Saratoga campaign, and I ended the episode discussing the Battle of Pines Bridge. This final small battle represented the no-man's-land quality of Westchester County after the major military operations had moved south. It was during this period that the brewing Civil War was played out on a local scale in my own backyard. While the Continentals held a line at the Croton River, British and American Loyalist units operated out of their base near the Kingsbridge. This would have been part of Westchester at the time. Let's discuss some of the personal stories involving these raids and how they came to represent the societal divide tearing apart at the seams. Hudson Valley lore divides the two apparent warring sides in the county into cowboys and skinners. The cowboys were indeed British light cavalry under Lieutenant Colonel Delancey, but the skinners term is a bit more complicated. A painting depicts the capture of Major John Andre by so-called opportunistic skinners. In reality, these were American militia and not some roving bands of marauders. First, James Fenimore Cooper and Washington Irving promoted the association of the term with some sort of American bandit groups operating outside of Continental oversight. In reality, the skinners were a group of New Jersey loyalists who operated in conjunction with Delancey's horsemen. If they had intercepted Andre, he would have been swiftly escorted to British lines in safety. Let's not let the American patriot side off the hook here, though. Increasing harassment and public displays of societal disrespect of Loyalist leaders and their families had taken a frightening turn by late 1775. Committees of public safety organized mini-coups and installed patriot regimes all over New York. These bodies used extrajudicial powers to fine, imprison, and confiscate property of suspected Loyalists. The British victories of 1776 in New York gave these powerful dissidents a chance to organize and strike back at their former neighbors. No more than 5 minutes down the street from me, two families struggled mightily against these equal and opposite magnetic centers of power. The Fowler and Ward families were both prominent landowners and community members. Judge Jonathan Fowler was an ardent loyalist and is connected to a unique modern piece of performance art. If you remember the song Farmer Refuted, it plays loosely with the Isaac Sears raid on Manhattan and Westchester on the night of November 23, 1775. Sears was a radical patriot and heavily involved in the underground acts of revolutionary civil disobedience and military preparations. He sought to silence the Loyalist press in New York that continued to pump out the arguments of Reverend Samuel Seabury, the rector of St. Peter Paul Church in Eastchester. The Reverend had been producing some compelling literature arguing against the violent revolutionary acts under the nom de plume Westchester Farmer. A young Alexander Hamilton attempted to counter the Loyalist pamphlets with some of his own, but the Reverend had powerful friends. Local notables Judge Fowler and landowner-owner Edmund Ward also helped support efforts that resisted sending delegates to Second Continental Congress. Sears took matters into his own hands and kidnapped the Reverend and Judge Fowler, parading them around New Haven. This drastic and illegal action received rebuke from both Hamilton and George Washington. Though Edmund Ward escaped the clutches of Sears' patriot raiders, he couldn't escape the watchful eye of his own brother. Stephen Ward was town supervisor and also a member of the Committee to Detect Conspiracies. He came from a long line of town elders that dated back to the Eastchester Compact of 1664. This agreement between the 10 founding families of the town was a similar social and legal compact to the earlier Pilgrim versions and set the foundations for good governance. In 1776, he was imprisoned for sedition in White Plains, with one of the signatures on the arrest order was his own brother's. Edmund escaped prison in 1777 and fled to British-controlled New York City. His property was confiscated in 1780, and he was forced to flee to Nova Scotia at war's end. The family house became the site of a minor local battle that was representative of the low-level reprisal rating in the county. Samuel Crawford was born in 1736 in White Plains, New York. He owned a large farm spanning much of the modern towns of Scarsdale and Eastchester. This would lead him to serve on the local town committee, and he was eventually appointed as a deputy from Westchester to the New York Provincial Congress. The New York Provincial Congress gathered in White Plains on July 9th to receive the Declaration, and the next day Samuel seconded the motion for independence here in New York. Shedding his political trappings, Crawford served as captain in a regiment under Colonel Drake and was tasked with intercepting Loyalist raids throughout the no man's land of Lower Westchester. On November 18, 1777, Crawford was killed in an ambush near the Ward House on what is now the modern White Plains Post Road. His duty and sacrifice exemplified both the upstanding courage and the dangers everyone who endorsed the Declaration faced. Though Judge Fowler had been kidnapped and publicly humiliated for his support of the Loyalist cause, his son Theodosius wasn't dismayed at all by the ill treatment of his father. The younger Fowler joined up in March of 1776 with the Continentals, just as his father and his powerful Loyalist friends were working to end the fledgling rebellion. Theodosius fought in the battles of Long Island, Saratoga, Monmouth, the campaigns against the Iroquois League, and finally Yorktown. By war's end, he was promoted to captain. His father died shortly after in 1787 and was buried in St. Paul's Church down the road. In 1841, Theodosius was reunited with his father in the same Eastchester graveyard. Torn apart in life by war, they were finally reunited in death. Also, here are the remains of Edmund Ward and his wife, both of whom decided to be interred in their land of birth, despite the ravages it had experienced. The American Revolution, as viewed through the lens of a civil war, is appropriate at both the national level and the local community one as well. It allows us to fully form and present the vast array of opinions and experiences without arbitrarily creating a zero-sum assessment based on hindsight. The colonial American self-conception was evolving, nuanced, and prone to wild swings. It's crucial to keep this lens in mind as we approach the 250th anniversary. Also, folks, we are attempting to save the Ward House from demolition. If you can lend a helping hand, please visit the Friends of the Ward House. All help is appreciated towards saving this important local site. Thanks for listening to New York, Quebec, and the water route to the center of the world. Please remember to leave a review and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and my new YouTube channel, NYQC 1754 Podcast.